You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
I'm still not used to this intro. This is still a new intro to me. It's like day three and I'm still not used to it. But anyway, whoever. Jose Youngster, MMAfighting.com, here for another Wednesday edition of the A-Side Live Chat. I had to make sure it was Wednesday before we went on air. But, of course, joining me, is as always, is my Wednesday-Friday co-host, P.T. Carroll. And joining us is this past Monday, Elias Theodoro became the first Canadian fighter on the A-Side Live Chat. Now it's 2 days in a row. Joining us is Sarah Kaufman. Sarah, how are you? How's life in quarantine these days?
Oh, well, it's quarantine-y, you know. I've been doing lots of puzzles, reading books, hiking. So, I mean, I guess it's good. I just want to punch people in the face a bit more. And yeah. By that, I mean at all.
Sure. PC has the same problems, right, PC?
Yeah, but, like, they aren't allowed even try to hit me back. that's the stipulation I need. And I need to be faster than them. So I'm very slow at the moment, which I found out by running my first 5K of all time the other day. So, yeah, I've got a lot to work on before I can start hitting people again, I feel.
Yeah.
And Casey, yeah, how's life with you? I hear there was a big earthquake in your neck of the woods yesterday, right?
Yes. So at about, what time? About midnight last night, me and Esther, we're pretty much asleep. And then all of a sudden, like, we're just about sleeping. And then we just hear this, like, it felt like a giant was outside our house and just kind of stubbed his toe in our house. So the house was clunk like that. And it was so loud. And, like, you just, like, like that. And, like, you just, am I dreaming it? Or no, it really happened. And, like, but you just kind of wait for the aftershock and it never came. So, yeah, it was just we're just like, oh, not today. I just don't need an earthquake right now. Like, maybe in a couple months. I don't know. But, like, yeah. So it's interesting, though. So as soon as the earthquake happens, you're like, oh, crap, I better put some clothes on because I'm going to run out in the street butt naked. I don't know. So I'm like, where are my glasses? And the house is kind of shaking still. But, yeah, it was fun. And then, the fun part about earthquakes is earthquake Twitter is such a thing now because you have, as soon as it happens, you're like, okay, I'm alive. So you grab your Twitter, grab your phone, because you don't know, am I in the middle of the earthquake or am I in the very outskirts? It's like, oh, look on your phone, oh, San Francisco's gone. You don't know. So
we learned Casey sleeps naked. That's the big thing we've taken away from this. Casey sleeps naked. Sarah, Pizzi, have you guys experienced earthquakes before?
I live on a fault line. Mm-hmm. So literally since I was in like grade two, I was like 7 or 8. We've been doing, or second grade, as you would say in the U.S. Is that what you guys say? What do you guys say?
For second grade? That's seven, 8 years old. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So anyways, so we used to do earthquake drills all the time. We'd like hide under desks and like practice our protocols because they've said for, you know, 20 something years or longer that we're right on the precipice of a massive 1 meter drop because our island's fault line goes underneath another one. So they always say that we're going to get a whole bunch of little earthquakes and then eventually have one massive one and we're going to drop a meter and it's going to be horrific. So fortunately, we haven't yet dropped a meter and we've had small earthquakes, but nothing real big.
PZ, is this all just jargon to you?
Yeah, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. But I woke up this morning and obviously I'm 8 hours ahead of Casey and Esther. And I see all these like shocked things like happening. And I was still waking up and I was like, what the fuck is Dana White after doing now? That was the first thing that crossed my mind. I was like, oh, for God's sake, what's happening now? And then I was like, oh, thank God, it's only an earthquake.
Just an earthquake. I was in Casey and I were in Vegas in July for that crazy earthquake during International Fight Week. It was the middle of the UFC Hall of Fame. Henry Cejudo almost ran out of the building. And our former co-worker, Mark Raimondi, I've never seen someone more scared about anything in my entire life. His exact words were, I'm from New York. I don't know how to deal with this, and ran away. So good memories when it comes to earthquakes. But of course, this is not our podcast. This is your all's podcast. You can ask any question you guys want, MMA or non-MMA related. I still remember, Pete's, and I still remember that excellent episode where we devolved into a 45-minute conversation about Bigfoot with Michael Chiesa. So we could talk about anything you all want. Sarah, you're in the Pacific Northwest, right?
Yes. In Canada, yes.
Yes.
But in Canada, we would consider the Pacific Northwest, because we'd be northeast, we'd be southwest.
Southwest. But anyway, so you are in the Pacific Southwest. Do you believe in Bigfoot?
No.
Wow. Controversial.
What about the skunk ape?
The what?
The skunk ape.
The skunk ape?
There is.
I only heard about it recently.
Michael Chiesa, who lives in Washington, gave us a 45-minute lecture on the differences between the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yetis, and skunk apes. Skunk apes apparently are 100% confirmed, and there's photos of them in the Everglades, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Casey?
Yeah, it's basically the Bigfoot of Florida.
Yeah, except they actually have like a legitimate photo of it, not just a grainy one.
The skunk apes live in Florida, that's where the UFC is going to be?
Yeah.
Boyd Island and skunk apes are real.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's the main event. Ferguson versus skunk ape.
Pay for that.
I'm telling you, like, you'll pay money. But you know what? I hear the skunk ape ain't going to make weight, so he's not eligible for bonus.
It's a bummer. That's a bummer. But anyway, you can ask any question you want on Twitter, the site. Casey's got them. What's our first question this week or today, I should say?
First question.
From at the seaside on Twitter, favorite three things to do during quarantine, hashtag the A-side. So excellent question, seaside. Sarah, what are your three favorite things to do to pass the time during quarantine?
I'm a little bit insane. So anytime I do really any activity, I do it for like incredibly long blocks of time. So like I'll pick up a book, but then I have to finish the book within like two or three sittings. So I've read, I think, 3-4 books so far, but over the course of like 2 days each, just like rip through it. Oh. I'm currently doing a 3,000-piece puzzle, which is a terrible, terrible, terrible decision. I'm doing it on my floor because it's so big. Like, it's ridiculous. So, I mean, I'm just doing like fill the time kind of things. I've been doing definitely a lot more hikes, and I mean, I live in a pretty beautiful place that we have lots of mountains and trails, and I can get out and do that. So really, that's it. And sadly, not punching people or choking people.
Right. What books have you read?
Oh. I read one, The Neuroscientist Who Lost Her Mind, which is pretty interesting. It's like this lady who's a neuroscientist, and then she gets brain cancer and goes insane, and then kind of comes back from that insanity. And so it's kind of her experience. I read one called A House in the Sky.
Wait, is that fiction? Is that nonfiction? What is that?
All nonfiction.
Oh, so it's true. Oh, it's a autobiography. It's like
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, A House in the Sky was really good. It's a Canadian actually was over in Somalia and got taken and held for ransom, and she was held for 15 months in Somalia. Jesus. And so it was kind of like her journey and her experience of going over there and kind of making decisions that got her stuck with this guy that was there with her. And so I kind of try and read somewhat informative but kind of autobiographical things. I don't know. I also like murder mysteries, but I just haven't read any lately.
What is the puzzle of? I know Casey's a big puzzler, right, Casey?
Well, Esther's a big puzzler, and yes, I Esther's just sit, puzzler. I watch her do puzzles, and I go, this is like going to take a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I help out for a little bit, and I find one, you know, side piece, and I go, yeah, you would never done this about me. I deserve half the credit now, because I found one piece.
I actually, I feel like most of my friends know I like puzzles, so I've been gifted a lot of very challenging puzzles. Later last year, a little while ago, I did a all entirely one color yellow puzzle. So it was just one color.
That sounds brutal.
It was not the most fun, but great that I got it finished.
Well, you're those insane people that buy that puzzle.
Just, yeah.
That's black belt and puzzle.
That's a black belt and puzzling.
That's quarantine insanity puzzle. That's like I have lots of time.
Yeah, the one I'm doing now is, 3,000 pieces is huge. So it's 4 feet by 3 feet, the actual size of the puzzle. And it's pretty much like a muted scene of like a field with some rocks, lighter rocks with some like a deer and two other smaller animals that are brown. And all of the pieces kind of look like the same shade.
Oh, no.
So just the sorting was a nightmare. I don't know. I'm like maybe 12, 15% done. I have a lot left.
Pizza, you're a born puzzler, right?
No, man. I have no patience. I just lose my shit. Like, I can't do anything. It's terrible. I wish I had more patience. I'm actually even trying to read again now, and I'm getting angry with the books. It's terrible. But I'm trying to, like, I'm thinking about doing exercise a lot. I'm not doing much of it. I'm thinking about it, though. I'm mentally preparing myself for the exercise. That's how I feel like I'm doing at the moment. And I'm just eating a lot. You know what I mean? Because you need to carb load before you're going to put on a lot of muscle. So that's what I'm doing.
Sure. Yeah. You stretching?
It's good logic.
I'm thinking about stretching. So, I feel like I'm halfway there.
Well, I maybe just get like a little stretching before we really get into the hard questions, Petey.
Sarah, are you aware that Petey is one of, if not the most flexible man in the world?
Here we go.
New guest. The new guest always gets.
Wait. Sarah's like, it's disgusting before it starts.
What do you think of that? Huh?
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Who needs to work out with these body mechanics? That's what I want to know.
All right,
your
turn, Sarah.
I used on, to Sarah. Train with. Yes.
Oh, no. Yes.
That's all I got. I'm not very flexible here. That just hurts. But I used to train with a guy, Brian Schaefer, who, he doesn't live here right now, but for like 10 years we've been training together. The most flexible human on the planet. But he's now developed, like, you'll be in top side control, and all you're doing is staying there and realizing, like, I don't know what is next to my head. It could be a foot. It could be his far foot. Like, you just never know, and like where the things are coming from and what he's using. It's incredible. He's so good. But it's just an entirely different experience rolling with someone who has the flexibility, but then the weird strength in that flexibility, because a normal position that you would be super dominant and controlling in, he turns it around and you're getting submitted. It's a pretty incredible thing. So, Pete, you could work on that and actually gain some skill.
I used to train jiu-jitsu a lot, like, and I'm not messing. I used to just give arm bars up so I could get out of bottom position. Say if I was mounted, I'd just like hold my arms up and get like triangle, so I knew I'd get out of it. But a few times, like, remember when I was a white belt, I got like my arm broke nearly. Like, I mean, I was like, oh, I'll just give this arm up, and a guy just nearly ripped my, and then everyone across the gym was like, they just hear me screaming, like, guess he's not that flexible after all.
That's me in the gym when I watch people getting submitted and like they don't want to tap, and I just, that's a tap. I hate it. Yeah. We actually have one guy who
around. I just see people's faces turning green, and I'll be in an armbar and I'll be like, Petey, please stop.
Girls are the worst. I try to never armbar girls because they either won't tap because they think you're not mean enough to break it. Or they're like, what? It doesn't hurt. And they're just so bendy that you either have to be willing to break it or just let it go. So I much prefer to choke pretty much any female versus armbar if I had the choice.
It is that, isn't it? Because it's actually a curse being flexible when you're training jiu-jitsu, because it doesn't hurt at all and then it breaks. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like you're going, oh yeah, this is a piece of piss. This is nothing to me. It's like, it doesn't feel like anything. And then suddenly it's like, Your life is over.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what she said.
Casey, how many arms you break?
No arms.
No arms.
Yeah. I kicked Sarah in the face once, though.
Wow.
He did. Whoa. He actually punched me really hard in the face one time, too. He's like, oh, I've never sparred. Like, be really nice. And so he's like, la, 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 la. Whoa! And he thought it was hilarious. I mean, I thought it was pretty funny, too. But Esther was there, and she was like, Casey! But then I just kicked him back, so it was fine.
Well, you call sparring, we call a normal day at MMA fighting when it comes to Casey. He beats all of us, especially PT.
Whenever we're doing interviews, like, we're on last question, and the reason why we know it's in the last question is Case just punches in the back of the head.
Like, I'm bored.
Prediction.
At least he gives us a heads up. Alex K. Lee just hits us.
Yeah. Don't ask about the scars.
Case
is not stealth. You see it coming, but he hits pretty hard. Like, it's,
yeah.
He is good power for someone who's not super fit. Although I know you're a bit more fit now.
A bit more.
Have you trained with him since he grew the mustache? Because I feel it will increase his stealthiness by maybe 50%.
I haven't. That is a good theory.
See? Sarah, it's just something I wanted to throw out there, just so you'll be aware of it when it comes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He moves a lot quicker with that stash.
Next question.
Hang on.
Oh, my. It would be the A side if we didn't veer off into a tangent. From Robin G87 on the site, a 6 feet society. If we have to get used to a 6 feet society with exceptions for competing athletes for entertainment, it would mean for the foreseeable future, MMA events will be without attending fans. If that continues all the way into 2021, will there be a lasting effect of bankrupt MMA organizations? And would that include big ones like Bellator and the UFC? So this question is asking, if there are no fans for the foreseeable future, will that affect a lot of organizations? I assume he's asking about smaller organizations, because I can't imagine Bellator and UFC will be hit that hard. Well, I'm sure they'll be hit, obviously, without ticket sales, but it will really affect those organizations that do rely on ticket sales. So, Sarah, I'll start with you. If this continues, what do you think the lasting effects will be on MMA organizations? I assume he's asking about local, smaller shows.
Yeah. So I think any show that doesn't have a TV deal, it's going to be a big issue. Like, any show that really relies on just the fans to carry the show, they're going to struggle. But I think that, honestly, for anyone who has a TV deal, in some ways, it might not be the worst, because there are a lot of promotions, that don't necessarily have huge crowds in general, or struggle to get the ticket sales. And in doing so, it almost has, if you have the live event and they pan to the crowd and there's 10 people in the crowd, it actually is worse off, because you have that feeling of, oh, nobody wants to come watch this. It's a weird energy. You don't get that same vibe. So if everyone is on close sets, it's a bit more of an even playing field. And really, the fights are what are going to be the selling features. So I think for organizations that have the viewership in terms of their TV deals, but maybe don't have the sales, and in some ways are paying these big venues to use the space, but then aren't filling them and aren't recouping that money, it might actually be a better thing for them. But the small organizations that are local and just do, amateur shows or pro-ams or anything like that, those are going to struggle for sure, because they have no revenue aside from the actual ticket sales, unless they develop some kind of online platform where people could pay to watch. And then again, maybe you'd see the numbers actually go up for those.
Yeah, my first thought were those smaller organizations where the fighters actually sell the tickets at their gyms and they get some cut of, like, those type of promotions. I assume that's what this individual is asking. PT, what do you have to say on this, about especially across the pond, where you have so many smaller organizations? A lot of these younger up and coming UK fighters eventually that want to get into the Cage Warriors and the UFC have to start somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, well, Cage Warriors would be the main feeder to the UFC in this neck of the woods. So I guess it's important to, you know, the health of that organization is very important to the European scene, the UK and Ireland in particular, when it's paved the way to, for 100 fighters to the UFC. They have already have plans to put on events behind closed doors when restrictions ease in the UK. It's quite bad there at the moment. But I have a feel, like, I mean, I'm thinking about what Sarah said there, and I think they can exist from event to event when they have that crowd there. I have a feeling that, like, you know, they might have a crowd of 2,000 people average for an event. I'm not too sure about that, but you'd assume that that gate is paying for some of the fighters as well. So I really don't know, but I think it's a promising sign that Graham Boylan has come out and said, look, as soon as those restrictions are eased and people can work to a certain extent anymore, they will be putting them on. So I guess that is a good sign. But I know KSW, you know, I spoke to Martin Lewandowski at the very start of this thing, and he was like, just logistically trying to put on an international event in Poland is a disaster, really, you know, trying to fly people in from all over different parts of the world to compete. What stage is the virus at in these different nations? What is the social responsibility of bringing these fighters into Poland if everyone else is observing these restrictions? So I think it's very difficult. It's going to be very difficult to put the shows on, to get them over the line, and hopefully it won't have an impact, but I do think it will at the end of the day. Just numbers on the ground will have a bigger impact for, say, not the big leagues, the likes of the Bellator, UFCs, PFLs. They won't feel the same impact, but I do feel as though the kind of feeding grounds for them promotions will.
Sarah, if offered a fight, would you take it amid this coronavirus pandemic right now? If someone came up to you, say, later today and said, we have a fight for you, would you accept it?
I mean, BC, where I am, it's not like on lockdown. It's not saying you can't go or you can't be around, but it's, I mean, they've been talking about finding people if they are around others. So legitimately, I have done zero physical contact training. I've hit the bag a little bit. I've done pads a couple times, you know, like out in a park. And then I'm just doing lots of workouts. But in terms of actual grappling, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, MMA sparring, I've done zero of that. Now, that being said, at this point, I'm fully ready to go. Like, I want to be training. And I feel like if I'm healthy and other people are healthy, I'd like to find a solution in the coming weeks to make that happen. And so if I had the opportunity to fight, I think what likely I would do is I would just move in with a training partner or two training partners and live in somewhat tight quarters that I would not enjoy because I like my alone time and personal time and being away from people because I like being alone. Mm-hmm. But I would for sure sacrifice that if it meant that I got to train with potentially the opportunity to fight. I just don't know what that looks like because I feel at this point, the logistics of everything involved. I think I could figure out the training with a few key people. You don't need 25 people. You need two. You could even get away with one good training partner. I considered, if it was allowed, even moving to Vegas and living with Joanne Calderwood, and then we could just train together. Just logistically with the countries and the borders and the recommendation to not travel, you know, if I were down there and then got hurt, I don't know that I would be able to be covered, or even if I got sick, I don't know that medically I could get covered. So it just might not be a smart decision, but I have for sure considered it and even looked into flights just kind of on a whimsy, knowing that it probably wouldn't happen. So I think you could figure out a way to train enough for a fight, but I think the logistics of actually where is this fight and who else is coming in and what precautions are being taken would be a big factor, whether it actually happens or not.
Are you still with PFL, Sarah? Or?
Yes, I'm still under contract with PFL right now. We were kind of in the process of literally right before all this went down, I had been talking with Ray quite a bit, kind of on like what potentially the next season looks like and different logistics that way. As of right now, I'm still signed with them and under contract with them. And they just announced that they're not doing any fights until 2021 now. So it's kind of I know.
if you get that monthly stipend like that they were talking about, I hope you are. They said they were, you know, contracted fighters will be put on a monthly stipend as well as moving the fights back. Does that apply to you?
Yeah, I got an email about it, and I think that Brilliant. Ray has talked to John about it as well. I don't know all the details yet. It's pretty awesome that they are willing to try and be supportive in a way, even though they're not, you know, the biggest organization, but they do have some decent funding and they really are trying to do what's best for the fighters and put the fighters first. But I mean, it is a long time between now and next May for the season to start. And so I haven't fought since last October. You know, it's a long time to sit. So I definitely hope to be able to get in some kind of competing, but I mean, I'm surprised that May 9th is even going to go.
Yeah.
To be honest, like it just seems like it's such a stretch to be trying to force these events to happen. And how are people training for them? And do they have partners or are they just ignoring the social distancing and just getting together? And I even saw a photo Yoel Romero put up with him and like 10 guys and they have masks on. Half of them are not even really on. And it's like, is that really doing anything?
Right.
It's probably not, but at the same time, I get it because I want to train and like might consider doing that at some point. It just doesn't seem the most responsible right now to be trying to force a fight for May 9th, unless again you're living with all the people you're training with.
I know even Amanda Nunes pulled out of the fight, right? Because she wanted a full camp. She was supposed to fight Felice Spencer on that or featherweight title defense, but she's like, I want a full camp, so she's already off that card and they haven't even officially announced it yet.
Wait, was that fight supposed to be May 9th in Sao Paulo? Yeah.
So no, that was going to be in Sao Paulo, but then it got bumped to the super card with all the title fights.
But it was on the same date though, right?
Yeah, but then when the 250 was going to be no more and then they were talking about Fight Island and this and that, she might have stopped camp. I don't quite know. Maybe there was a lot of up in the air. Maybe she thought it had officially been canceled, but as far as I know, she's not fighting on the May 9th card.
See, I was confused by that because she said it was short notice, but it sounded more like just because the restrictions and training, that's why she pulled out, not because it's short notice.
Maybe.
I guess, yeah. Either way, I mean, I get it.
I definitely
I think it's probably one of those things too where you think, okay, well, no, it'll be fine. You know, I'll be able to fight. But then when it comes down to it, the training is different. And especially for someone like Amanda, who is currently on this crazy high, you know, like huge run that she's on, she's up super impressive. You don't want to just fight for the purpose of fighting, especially she's probably in a position now where she doesn't need the money. You know, she has a kid on the way. She has a lot going on. And then also with the restrictions of just being around people, I'm sure that the training is different. Even if you're training with one person or two people or you're hitting mitts, it's just not the same as having your trusted people around you. So I for sure get that, you know, with all this on again, off again, moving the cards, maybe it's going to happen here, that instability, you know, like, let's just wait. What's the rush? Fight in June, fight in July.
We had JoJo on Eurobash a couple of weeks back. I think it was 3 weeks ago. And obviously at the time, it was in that interview that she kind of revealed that the date for the Shevchenko fight would be pushed back. And she was saying she had a training partner in quarantine that was just leaving to spar her and go back into quarantine every time. It's like, it seems like so much to ask of your training partners even, right? Like it's really, really, the situation is just so insane. Like it's hard to even get your head around how you'd put a camp together. You know, it's insane.
Yeah, I think ultimately you'd want to live with the person because then you know what they're doing outside of when they're not with you. Mm-hmm. If you want to go by the recommendations of staying within your small group, not doing extra, you know, not spreading germs, not collecting germs from anywhere else. And if you're not living with the person, there's just that chance that their house carries it or someone else's house carries it or the, you know, anywhere they're going. And so just the risk, you know, it gets exponentially larger, the less control you have of it. So when Jessica Andrade moved in with her training partner, that made sense to me. It was like, yeah, this makes sense. You live together, you train together, there's no issue. And even then, if someone doesn't feel well, you quarantine them and kind of isolate them out too so that you don't get sick. And I know Joanne actually did get sick and in part, I think it's because her training partner actually went to a different spot to just just to work out, not to necessarily do any kind of contact, you know, and it's not a direct correlation, but it is, you know, she did get sick and then, you know, had to take some time off as well. So it's just so easy to spread that it's definitely of a concern, and how they're going to bring in, I've even the logistics of you bring in a fighter, and even if you only let them have one corner, if you have a card with 12 fights, that's 50 people just between one fighter and one corner. And most people bring two corners or a training partner. So already you have 50 people, and then never mind all the airports and everything that they've gone through to get to where they're at. And then if it has potentially 4 days where you might be and entirely you could be asymptomatic, it's just so hard to, you know, get all those factors in play to have a safe event.
Yeah, and I mean, fighters are so healthy. Like, I mean, they're, you know, they're elite athletes. Like, if there's anyone that's going to be asymptomatic here, it's probably going to be you guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's because your immune system are probably so strong from training, being on the mat all the time. As we know, not the cleanest place in the world. You know what I mean? It's like you guys are really.
Well, it depends on the gym. Our gym is super clean.
Of course, your gym. I was talking about Casey's, man.
For sure, Casey.
Oh, no. No.
Can't trust that mustache.
This mustache is disinfected every hour. Don't worry.
Although cutting weight too, you'd be for sure immunocompromised cutting weight.
That's what I was gonna say.
That's actually the big thing. Like, I was kind of tweeting, like, okay, if they're gonna do fights, please eliminate, or at least everyone fights one weight class up. At least it's just because that's where, like, I don't know, Sarah, that's where it's my experience watching and being with other fighters and your own experience, during that weight cut and that hard training period, that's when you're actually most susceptible to getting any sort of illness, just in general, right?
For sure. And it's, you know, it's like, especially if you've done a full camp, the end of a camp, you're already oftentimes banged up a bit, bruised up. You've been training super hard, so you're maybe a bit run down. On top of that, you're dieting down, you're leaning out, you're getting ready to do a water load or whatever kind of cut you do. And every little thing, you know, catches up to you. People get headaches, they get a little bug, they get a cold, they get a flu. Easily people get some kind of bacteria or some kind of food poisoning from deciding that they're going to eat sushi or McDonald's. What is that? I remember one fight, one guy literally went to McDonald's and got a salad with like the fake chicken on it, and then had mad food poisoning for the next day. You know, fighters are idiots. And on top of that, they're, straining their bodies and forcing their bodies to go down in weight. I think it would be better if people did fight a weight class up during these times, but just people wouldn't want to do it because, again, we're idiots and we just want to, you know, be our leanest self. So unless it was mandated and forced everyone to fight up a weight class, like, except for me, who's fighting up two weight classes right now, sure. Most people wouldn't choose to fight bigger people if given the option.
Sure.
I mean, I never knew fighters were idiots until you told me that story about someone ordering a salad at McDonald's. Come on.
Yeah.
God damn it.
That was ridiculous. Yeah.
It's downright disrespectful. Deserve
at
to
least
be
get chicken nuggets or something.
Absolutely, I agree with you completely.
Question on YouTube from anonymous dude 123. Question: Sarah, are you a fan of open scoring? Do you want to know the score, or would you rather not? Thoughts on open scoring at the last Invicta event? Thank you. So yes, we've talked about this quite a bit on this show. Casey was a big proponent of open scoring, especially after the, I believe it was what, UFC 247, that was John Jones, Dominic Reyes, and the scoring was all over the place that whole event. Invicta tried it. We asked all of the champions at that Dominance MMA Media Day. Some of them were for it, some of them were not. Habib was not for it because I can't quite remember his reasoning, but he was against it. Kamaru Usman was against it. Kayla Harrison was against it. So, Sarah, what are your thoughts on open scoring, and how did you think Invicta handled it if you saw it?
Unfortunately, I didn't see the Invicta event, so I'm not sure how that scoring went. I have been at an event in Vancouver up here that did open scoring a few years ago, and I was in a corner for it. And at first I legitimately didn't know what was going on because I wasn't aware they were doing open scoring. From a coach standpoint, I think it's a really good thing. Even from a fighter standpoint, I think it's also a good thing, but you're going to have people who end up coasting in some way.
Yeah.
So it's like people will start protecting the score based on knowing what the score is. You know, in a close fight, that matters for sure more. If you think, okay, I'm up two rounds, and then all of a sudden you realize you're down, or it's even, maybe you alter how you're doing that third round. I because of the 10-9 scoring system, I do think it open scoring in some ways would tend to, if someone's up two rounds and they know they're up two rounds, they could literally just play almost keep away for the third round. And which is somewhat the smart thing to do. If you know you're winning, you can kind of coast and just not allow the other person to be that effective or effective enough to get a 10-8 score that it makes it hard for the person who's trying to win the fight to get back into it if someone's just playing, you know, an anti-fight game. And then on the other side, it also, it's great for the person who is maybe not losing or not winning. If they know that they're down on the scorecards for sure, you know, it's going to be more motivating for them. So I think it's a good thing. Like, you'd want to know the score in kind of any other game. The one thing that it's not good for is like the moment of like, and new or, and still mm-hmm. in a close fight where people are like very invested in those moments because you already know the fight ends and immediately you should know who's already won except for the last round to score.
Sure.
So in that sense, from the crowd and from the spectacle of, you know, the big reveal,
yeah,
you lose that from a fan standpoint, but from a fighter standpoint, it's very open and on the table as to what's going on. And I think that I would prefer that because then I know what's going on because I like numbers and I like to know what's up.
Casey, that Invicta card, they had it on an iPad and they would show the corners, right? And then it was up to the luck. Like this,
well, I mean, that
the Invicta event didn't even really, it had a lot of finishes and there were a lot of dominant wins. So there was no like, there was no controversy. So it didn't turn out to be one of those cards that would say need it. But it was up to the corners whether they told the fighters, right?
Yeah. They would hold, the score and show the coach who's talking to the fighter. So it's up to them if they want to go, you lost that round, you know, which they do anyway, you know. So, and that's, you know, you've seen lots of times, I mean, Sarah, you've probably experienced this where you most likely won the round, but your coach says, you know, we don't know who won that. Take it like you lost that round. Now you have to, you know, I think it's going to change for every fighter, every strategy that the whole, you know, are they going to coast? Are they not going to coast? Are they going to fight harder? But Sarah, I would like to ask you though. I want to take your, when you fought Valentina. Now looking back on it, after you came back from that first round, your coach Adam goes, "I know you didn't get hurt, but you lost that round." Like, did you know that in that fight, or does it even matter at such a high level? Or I mean, like, what changes in your mind?
Or is it Yeah, so for me in that fight, I mean, there were a lot of things going on there. I had, like, when I walked out, it was that I, like, wasn't, I literally walked out and was like, that's weird. I feel no emotion whatsoever. I wasn't excited. I wasn't nervous. I was just there, which was a really weird feeling. And for me to recognize that as I was, like, you love fighting. This is fun. Like, let's go. And in that fight, you know, I was just kind of like going through the motions. And at the end of the first round, I was like, well, that sucked. And then at the end of the second, I was like, oh, God. And I went back thinking like, okay, well, I clearly have lost both rounds. And when I watched it later, I was like, oh, that fight was actually way closer. You know, because, you know, in the second round, I got back up, but I just stayed there. But then like she was doing nothing and I was trying to hit her. So like there were things that were going on, but I was just like very like, you know, both Greg and Adam were like, what are you doing? Like you've lost. And in the third round, when I started out, I kind of started the same. And then at one point I picked up a single leg and was like, oh, she kind of fought it. You know, I should just let it go. And then made the decision, you know, I'll just go down and easily won the round. I could have done that the whole time. Like, that was ridiculous. But I definitely had that feeling, like, you know, when you know how you feel when you've won or lost a round. And so give you a round that you thought you won, or they give you a round that you thought you lost, or they don't give you a round you thought you won. So in those close rounds, for sure, it would be more important to know, hey, look, they have you winning this fight, or they gave you that round, so you better win the next one, or vice versa. Does that make sense, or was that just a ramble? Maybe that was just rambling. Sorry.
I thought it was really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a close fight. I can remember, like, we're watching it from a European perspective. We're like, oh, shit. You know, like, it felt really close at the end. So it's just really interesting to hear you speak about it. Yeah. Like, and do you, you know, when you're looking for this emotion inside yourself when you're coming out, is that something you always do? Like, is there something, just a very unique feeling that comes along with having a good night, say? Like, do you know you're feeling a certain way?
Generally, I feel like when I walk out to a fight, I almost always feel the same. It's like, you're a little bit nervous, but I'm super excited. Why am I doing this? I'm an idiot. Like, I have a good record. I mean, I like what I'm doing and it's super fun, but, like, you know, I could embarrass myself. Like, there's for sure always these fights, but it's also like, until I'm actually fighting and until the fight is over, like, the whole week, I'm like, okay, 7 days and the fight's going to be over. 4 days, sleeps, the fight's going to be over. And then as soon as it's over, I'm like, oh gosh, I just want to do it again. Like, you can't wait until it's over, but then you want to go back. As soon as it's done, you want to go back and do it again. So it's this, like, weird doing, but also this is so cool. And almost every fight I've walked out, I'm like, this is amazing. When I fought Valerie Letourneau, was like my first time kind of like in a big crowd. I was fighting for GSP was in her corner, and it was, I don't know, like 13,000 people. So one of the bigger crowds. And at the time, like, for sure, the biggest crowd I'd been in front of. And I walked out first because she was the home. And I walked out and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then she walked out and the crowd was like, ah, like, it was so electric. I mean, it didn't look like such a scary gorilla or bear was chasing me like I just did, but it was, like, really cool. Like, the lights were twinkling. And I took that as, like, this amazing. I took it in. I, like, felt the energy. And one of the guys who was in my corner was like, don't worry about that. Don't let this, you know, don't let them cheering for you. And I turned to him and I was like, hey, they're cheering for her to beat me. They're cheering for me too. Like, I took it as a big positive. And use that energy. It's just like a feeling you can't really describe unless you've been put in that situation of having the excitement of everyone being, you know, unanimously almost excited about the event that's about to happen. So that feeling is for sure one of, like, the high, having the nerves, but the excited nerves.
Well, I think this is a perfect segue, Casey, and I think you have a couple photos lined up.
I do. Sarah, so I'm gonna show you some photos from some of your previous fights. I just want you to just talk about the memories you have of that certain photo. So we've already talked about this fight, but
this, for those of you just listening, Sarah in full mount on current flyweight champion Valentina Shevchenko. So yes, Sarah, what goes through your mind when you see this photo?
So at this exact time of the fight, I could have gotten here and gone to this position. Like, I had my coach, Adam, yelling, like I heard him counting down, 3 minutes left, 2:30, 2 minutes left. And for some reason, I'd been hitting it a lot in training and it was right there. I kept going, I need to get a finish. And then with like 20 seconds left, I just stepped into mount like nothing. And then was like, I have to do it. So that's what I'm doing with my stupid face there, where I'm like, I then, you know, time ran out. And I was like, ugh, I heard the 10-second, like, clack, clack, clack go. And I'm just like, God, what have I done? You know, in the last, like, 3 seconds, I was like, I guess I'd try for an armbar. Because what else do you do when you have 3 seconds and you are clearly not going to stop them on strike? So that was going through my head right now. Like, you're an idiot. What have I done? I wasted the whole fight.
That was so tense, that moment. That was incredibly tense. Watching it even, it was like, holy shit, what is going on?
All right, Jose. So, Sarah, describe the photo for the people who are listening online. We have a new photo up. Describe what they're seeing.
Sorry, am I describing you?
Yeah, give it.
Okay. So this is actually the first. Esther sent me this photo, and I don't know how I hadn't seen it before. So this photo is from the second fight with Alexis Davis. So it was when we fought in Strike Force. So mm-hmm. we fought originally in Canada. Walking back out of the corner, this is the first time I was cut. So I had cut Alexis early in the round. I had thrown like this beautiful right elbow and was like, oh, it worked. And I immediately started going like, psh, and it like opened up and it was bleeding. They like paused the fight. Doctor came in. I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep hitting it. And then at some point she elbowed me or punched me. I don't even know. I think it might've been an elbow. And it was like right in the corner of my hairline. And so then all of a sudden, you know, now I'm bleeding. And this is me walking back to the corner after a super, super fun round. And I don't know, the fact that I'm just staring straight into the lens is just such a cool yeah. photo. It was, yeah, first time I saw it was when Esther sent it to me, you know, when I kind of put up some photos from the fight. So, yeah, it's just an amazing photo and just like a moment that I won't forget. Just walking back to the corner and being like, all right, we're in a fight. It's happening.
Actually, I just want to point out you have a really cool outfit on.
Yeah. What's going on with it? What's that logo?
Blowout cards.
You know, and the fact that I'm wearing white shorts is always a great choice for someone with such pale legs. It wasn't my choice.
All right, next photo.
That's a really cool photo, isn't it?
It's so cool. Oh, I love this photo. Okay. So this is actually from my first fight with Leslie Smith. It was in between Strikeforce and UFC. Pretty much, you know, Sean Shelby had said, hey, feel free to go get a win because we don't want to use you until you've had a win, essentially. Not in so many words, but, you know, they wanted – I had just lost to Ronda, which I do think had I won the fight with Ronda in August of 2012, I do not think that females would have been brought into the UFC because there's like a 2% chance that Dana White would have put his money on me. And by 2%, wow. I mean like maybe 0.2%. And for sure, you know, losing that enabled, you know, Ronda to be like, oh, look how amazing she is. She just dismantled the former champion. So, you know, I feel like I did my part. It's so upsetting, but I did my part and helped the sport grow by
silver lining,
taking one on the arm and embarrassing myself in front of the world. But that being said, this Leslie Smith fight, you know, we took the fight. I always knew that Leslie was going to be like a tough fight in the sense that she's just like gritty and grinding and kind of unorthodox and like not very good, but also good. Like it's just like a fight you're never going to look good in for the most part. You're just going to have to like grit it out, get in there and fight. And so this whole fight, you know, she's much taller than I am. Shocking. Everyone I fight is taller. But so she was much taller and she kept trying to head kick me repeatedly. And so for the most part, I kept blocking them. And then at one point I just stepped back. And as I stepped back out of range, it was like within her big toe range. And so her big toe like slapped across my chin and for whatever reason turned and twisted. I guess I was too relaxed, twisted my face enough that it dropped me. Like I instantly just fell down. And so I was cheering as I was going down clearly. So I cheered for Leslie saying, good job. And then down I fell. And then as soon as I was on my butt, I was fine. But it's just such a hilariously great moment in my fighting career. Like the fact that it's captured and that I look like such an idiot is so phenomenal. And again, Esther Lynn is incredible.
Is that, oh, another one. Is this after your Roxanne fight?
Yeah, so that's Roxanne on the floor there. And oh, yeah. Granted, I did a really stupid dance. Like I'm essentially doing stupid things in almost all of these photos. But so this was really close to Victoria. It was like just, I think it was Kent, Washington. So I had like a group of, I don't know, maybe 30 people drive down on this big bus. They like rented a bus and they drove down to the fight. And so right at the end of this fight, I pretty much was able to turn to like the crowd that was sitting and that were like all my students and all my teammates, and do my little happy jumping dance where I like flip my fingers around like a broken butterfly, and point my toes and just jump 3 or 4 times up in the air. So that was kind of this moment was I had just, it was the third round and Roxanne and I, you know, not necessarily the most exciting fight. It was kind of like stuck on the cage a little bit. And then she tried to armbar me and I decided, you know, I'll just stand up. And then as I stood up, she kept holding. I was like, I guess I'll just put her back down. So I slammed her back down and then, this was the result. And, you know, I've trained with her quite a bit since then because she's down at Syndicate and she's down at, in Las Vegas. And so I've gone down to help her train and help Joanne train and train with her quite a bit. And this has come up a couple times. And the last time it came up, John Wood was trying to make a joke. Because I think Roxanne said, oh, you know, I've never been knocked out from punches. And then John said, like, oh, yeah, just Sarah picked you up and slammed you on your head on the floor. I guess that's And she was so mad. And I was like, John, come on. Like, we're literally standing inside the cage together talking. And I mean, it's 10 years ago and it happened. You know, you win some, you lose some. But, oh, I was just like, oh, John, come on. Anyways, funny story. But that was a good moment and probably one of the most recognizable in my career in terms of a pretty crazy finish.
Okay, and this one might be a little difficult for you to remember, but see if you can pick out this photo, Sarah.
So this, I actually, on my walk here today, I was thinking about this photo. So this photo was taken after the Jessica I fight. So it was my first fight in the UFC. I was supposed to fight Sarah McMahon. She pulled out of the fight. Jessica I took the fight on short notice, but it was still a full camp. It was in Texas. Mm-hmm. Which is the worst place to fight in the whole world when it comes to judging. I will never want to fight there ever again. And so, yeah, this was at the end of the fight. I mean, I very clearly thought that I won the fight. I knew that the first two rounds were closer. The third round, I just like lay a beat down and then came back a split decision. I was like, wow, that's surprising. And then I think right after this photo, I think Ariel Helwani actually came up to me and said, oh, just so you know, one of the judges gave the third round to Jessica I, and that's what lost you the fight. And so, you know, it was probably one of the times where I lost, but didn't feel like I lost. I wasn't actually that upset after. I was just like, that's a bummer. I got paid half my money. It now says I lost when I didn't lose. But overall with the fight, I was okay. But then I had this sweet, sweet shiner under my left eye. And so we took this really awesome photo of me pointing because I find bruises and black eyes hilarious.
Do you do you know when that got overturned to a no contest, right? That fight later on.
Right.
Do you get any, like when you hear that news, are you like, yay, it's a no contest now? Or what goes through your mind like?
I mean, it got overturned to a no contest, not because they reviewed the judging, which I think that there should be some
marijuana, right?
For that. Yeah, it was because she tested positive for marijuana and then was like, oh, I didn't smoke it. I was in a house with someone who did. I'm like, dude, who cares? You smoked it. Stupid decision because, you know, these are the limits and you're over them. You didn't play within it. You get it? Thank you. But yeah, so when I saw it got overturned to no contest, I actually found out, like I find out most things, from like the media and social media and Twitter and everyone being like, oh, sweet, your fight to no contest. And I was like, what? So I thought, I didn't know what it was about. And then, you know, it was because of the marijuana. And in some ways, I'm glad that it got overturned because I didn't think that I deserved to have a loss for that fight. But I also feel like I should have had a win. And so while it does say a no contest, it doesn't say I lost that fight. I know that I didn't get the pay that I would have if I had won. I also know that it affects your trajectory in how they now match you up for your next fights. And for me, it was a huge effect. I literally got, I didn't get any opportunities for much longer than I would have if I had won that fight. You know, so it, the trickle-down effect, while it doesn't say I lost, it also didn't give me the opportunities that I would have had if I'd had the win.
Well, you're not wrong about Texas either. That card we were talking about with all these scorecards all over the place was Houston.
Oh,
so that's, yeah, that's where that stemmed from. I think that's the fight James Krause took on like 24 hours notice, had his opponent in an arm bar for 4.5 minutes, loses the first round on one of the judges' scorecards. Turns out that judge got a black belt from James Krause's coach. So conflict of interest, to say the least.
Not James Krause, his opponent's coach.
Yeah, his opponent's
Houston, coach. Right? Houston.
Yeah. Houston.
Where Casey's from.
That was the Lauren Murphy, Andrea Lee fight happened on that one. That one had a lot of people talk about the main event. That was the John Jones, Dominic Reyes. A lot of people think Dominic Reyes won. But if you look at the media, it was still pretty even. A lot of people still think John Jones won.
Right.
I don't know a lot of people that think Lauren Murphy won that fight, especially if you go back and look at the MMA decisions. I think it's like 90% of the people think Andrea Lee won, but the Texas judges gave it to Lauren Murphy. So a lot of weird judging that whole entire night.
Yeah, and the fact that there really is no recourse for it. Like, their judging directly affects the careers and the trajectories and the monetary value and so many factors of the sport. And the fact that there can be this many, what really should be considered like pretty horrible decisions, and that rounds don't get overturned, there's no review of them. And even if they do review, like, you didn't do a good job, that doesn't translate back. Like, you can't retroactively change that.
Right.
I think that for sure is a huge issue with the system. Because they could have a conflict of interest. They could know almost nothing about the sport, but have taken a course to now be a judge and not really understand the intricacies. There's just a lot that's kind of packaged into that job. And it is a very serious job. And you even see, what was the one card where there was like a guy who was supposed to be watching and Joe Rogan's yelling about how the guy was like on his phone.
I think that was the Houston card. I think that was that same card.
Maybe it was the same card, but like, he's not even watching the fight. The fight's happening. You're not even, you're on your phone. Like, you're getting paid and you're affecting people's careers.
I think that was the Andrea Lee fight.
Yeah, it was the Lauren Murphy fight.
That was the Lauren Murphy, Andrea Lee fight.
Yeah. It was later proven, though, that he was looking at an iPad. Like, he was watching the fights on an iPad, right? They give you an iPad so you get an alternate view, apparently. But I feel like, look, you're completely right about Texas, and that night was a huge spotlight. But, you know, like, there is some great judges out there as well. So I get annoyed when people say the media is bullshit, and I'm like, well, fuck me. Like, I mean, I'm working every hour of every day.
Well,
so
you're bullshit. I do think everyone else is pretty good.
Wow.
Keep up the great work, Texas judges. Great work on that Jessica I fight.
Cold-blooded.
Some nice things out there, though, just for the
record. From Maria Gronin, I apologize if I mispronounce your name. From the YouTube comments, Sarah, what is your favorite dance move when you go out dancing?
So remember earlier when I said I'm a super big loner and I like to be alone? I do not go out. Like, given the option, I do not go out pretty much ever. I just like to be at home. I like to train. I like to be at home. And that's pretty much it. Now, granted, I teach a lot and we often have music on, and I'm always just doing idiotic. There's no specific dance move that I do. I just bounce around and literally I'm just an idiot at all times. I'm like, for sure, a fan of like the boy band moves.
Sure.
I like to do a good rendition of a boy band or Yeah, I mean, I just bounced around like an idiot. I grew up dancing.
What would be a boy band move? I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, you know, there's like the. There's so many. There's so many good moves. But I perpetually tap dance because I grew up dancing. And so everywhere I go, I just like to make rhythms with my feet. And most people I know hate it a lot, but I love it. Like, I'm always there with you.
My dad has yelled at me my entire life growing up because I'm always tapping my feet no matter where I go.
Yeah.
I just want to dance, Dad. I just want to dance.
Yeah, seriously, man.
I just want to dance.
I don't want to watch sports. Let me dance.
That's those Irish jeans. That's the Lord of the Dance coming out in the U.S.
That's real true.
Oh, I loved Irish dance. When, like, river dance was a big thing, I took Irish step dance, and I loved it.
Yeah, Michael Flatley's my cousin.
No, he's not.
Yeah, no, yeah, but I mean, that was a good
All right, we're going to we're at an hour. We got lots of questions, so we're going to, since people submitted these questions, we're going to fly through them pretty fast. So
rapid fire
before we go to our promo. Hold on.
Thank you, Maria, for the question.
All right, one moment.
Hi, Sarah, from Trumbo on the site. Since PFL season is off, which sucks, wondering if other promotions get started earlier than PFL. Are you free to take fights elsewhere? Also, if you got any rematch you wanted from your career so far, who would it be?
Okay, so I am under contract with PFL, so I'm not sure what that would look like. I'm sure that if I were given an opportunity and wanted to take it, I could talk with them, given that I'm fighting at 155 for PFL and I would prefer to fight at 135 in my own division. But who knows who's going to get started and what that looks like even. So I'm not sure of, but I would look into it if the option or the opportunity was right. In terms of a rematch, pretty much any of my losses I'd like to have back. You know, like, I'd love to fight Rhonda again because I could have just done so much better, but she's out. I would, of course, love to fight Valentina again because that was – I don't think it would be a super fun fight. I do think it would be a pretty boring fight because she just has, like, that ability to pace and slow a fight down and almost lull you into a sense of boredom, and then she does something really impressive. So I wouldn't be necessarily excited in terms of actually fighting. But the person I'd like to fight the most would be Misha Tate. I don't know. Even though I won our first fight, I would just like to fight her again. I just pushed for that for years and made an awesome cupcake smashing video. It's just a fight that she just has a face you want to hit.
Wow.
Oh, damn.
Holy shit, Sarah.
Oh, thank you for the question, Trumbo, and for bringing out that side of Sarah.
That was amazing, yeah.
From Sports Week MMA on Twitter, I'd ask Sarah, how many times per year does she feel is optimal for fighters? I was thinking in terms of striking balance between earning money, recovery, and just waiting for a good opportunity to naturally create itself. Hashtag crystal myth. Not even going to respond to that. So, Sarah, what is the what do you feel is the most optimal amount of fights for a fighter to take per year?
For me, I would say like 3 is pretty awesome. 3 kind of gives you ample time to train, get better first, like work on skills, have your fight, perform in the fight, recover, kind of do it again, and hopefully make some adjustments in between. 4, like for me, I love fighting, so 4 would be great, but it is a lot on the body, and if there's an injury within that, that can be hard to keep that schedule having 4. And also you're not really making many gains in terms of your technical improvement. So I think 3 is probably like perfect in terms of being able to still improve, and make the changes you need to stay healthy. I think 1 is definitely not enough. 2 is like bare minimum, but still not really enough. 3 is kind of like that perfect window where you're probably not overtraining too much, and can still get better in between.
From Mark Krabzak on Twitter.
Okay, sorry, go on.
Been watching old UFC cards and can't handle the Rogan Goldberg combination. Who are your favorite commentators or combination in MMA UFC? My personal favorite is Michael. I can never pronounce his name wrong.
Chavello. Chavello.
Yeah, yeah. He has been good since the HDNet fight nights. Hashtag the A side. So, PT, Sarah, Casey, your favorite commentator combinations?
I don't Rob know. Wharton.
Josh Palmer, Cage Warriors. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. I was just saying, I don't really know who goes. I get so confused because a lot of the voices sound the same, and I'm never sure of who's talking at what time. I really like Paul Felder's commentary. I like John Anik. I enjoy actually a lot of the fighters who they've been having, like Paul Felder. I like DC. I like Dominic Cruz as well in some ways, but I think Paul Felder comes off quite easily, you know, easy and flowing with his commentary. And does he normally partner with Anik, or who does he normally partner with?
He's done a lot with Anik. I think he's done some with Cruz too, but in my mind, I just picture him next to Anik a lot.
Yeah, me too. So I guess maybe them, but I'm sure there's others who are pretty good.
Casey, your favorite combo quickly.
My combo I would like to see would be Mauro Ranallo with,
yes,
as play by play and color commentary by Dominic Cruz. I think that's a good mix of personalities.
I like that, but with DC instead of Cruz.
I kind of like the. It would just be, I like the dryness of Cruz with the over the top of Mauro, but DC is a good one too.
I think it would just turn into full on like professional wrestling commentating if we got DC and Mauro, and I would love every second of it. PC, quickly, your favorite.
I love the Cage Warriors guys. Just want to give them a shout out. Josh Palmer and Brad Wharton, they're great. And I don't really mind all that much. It doesn't, like, I mean, I particularly enjoy that, but I never really am watching a UFC card going, oh, this commentary is so bad. I don't get that. I see everybody calling for people's jobs every Sunday morning. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? That's my 2 cents.
There you go. Thank you, question. Mark.
That was from, who is that? Mark. Yeah.
Mark Krabzak.
That wasn't right.
Ask the panel on Instagram, next 5 UFC champions to lose their belt.
That's a lot.
Pizzi, you want to take
this
one? That's
a lot of champions.
That's a lot of champions.
If Cejudo fights Jan, maybe.
There you go.
I think John Jones in dodgy territory at the moment. I think he's unbelievable. I think he's the best in the division by a long shot. It's just everything that's happening and the last 2 performances. I think that could be a good time, but again, it's John Jones. He's the greatest. I don't think Izzy's going to lose it. Usman's got a lot of competitive fights around him. I mean, the Colby fight was close until it wasn't. I don't know. I don't think Khabib is losing his title anytime soon, lightweight, even though the Tony fight is amazing. I don't think Volkanovski is either. Oh, yeah, I mean, I think Cejudo, like, I guess the reason why I'm saying...
ladies.
Yeah, I know, but Valentina isn't losing it. I don't think anytime soon. I don't think Amanda Nunes is either.
Don't sleep on Felicia Spencer against Amanda Nunes. I think that's a lot tougher of a fight than people. People aren't giving Felicia Spencer enough credit.
Oh, you thought I was joking of that tweet, Sarah? When I did.
I legitimately, Casey tweeted that, and I was like, "Are you being funny?"
I think there's like, have you seen Nunes like in her bad fights, right? Like, and I think Spencer's a horrible matchup for her.
Yeah, I mean, Spencer's tough, but I think that Nunes at this point, her range is really good. That I think Felicia's going to have a hard time like getting in there and just holding on to her. Not impossible. And Felicia is very good on the ground. But I don't think it's going to be, I would still put my money on Nunes.
The women's champions are really dominant. Like at the moment, like, I mean, there's Savage is at the top of every division. That's just like, I mean, it's just hard to see someone beating Zhang. It's hard to see someone beating Nunes or Valentina at the moment, as far as I'm concerned. Especially after Joanna and Wai Lee, like that was fucking crazy.
Was insane. It was so amazing to watch.
Wai Lee has a tough tasks ahead of her with if she ever fights Rose. I think Tatiana Suarez has been hurt for a long time, so she was at one point the scariest fighter in that whole division. And now that she hurt her neck, she's kind of waiting to heal up while the champion is active. I think Tatiana Suarez is the boogie woman of that division whenever she comes back.
Yeah, yeah. Very tough fight.
Okay, now we don't have any more questions, but I'm gonna roll a video. Oh. And this is a special gift for Sarah. Now, you won't be able to hear it, Sarah, but you're going to recognize it because of the way the feed works. But our audience will be able to hear it,
okay?
Unfortunately. So,
unfortunately.
You are welcome to everyone out there.
So,
right.
So here it goes. Hold on. Hold on a second.
Go ahead.
I want to make you smile whenever you're sad.
I screwed it up. Around.
Yeah, what did you say? A rye? Who says that? I want to carry you a rye.
Shit. Okay.
Idiots.
Take two.
Take two.
You ready?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I want to make you smile whenever you're sad. Carry you around when your arthritis is bad.
Thanks, Pete.
Well done. That was beautiful.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well done, Sarah. That's amazing. How
long have you been sitting on that, Casey?
Yeah, no,
that was the only reason. That was the only reason I invited Sarah on the show, to be honest.
That is fair. That's from 10 years ago in October. Jeez. Yeah. Crazy.
Wow.
And I told you, like, we shot that. I was covering a Strikeforce event at the time, and we shot that. I think you wound up losing that fight, right?
That was my very first loss. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up.
I remember I shot it. You were like, oh no, you can't air that. I was like, okay, just win the fight, and then we'll throw it out there. And like a dummy, you lost the fight on purpose just so I wouldn't air the dang video. That was the first thrown fight. Yeah. All right, whatever.
Well,
that was great.
We'll have to get Brian Kelleher back on. We can get a musical rendition of the A-side going.
Yes, yes. Ukulele player, a fine ukulele player.
Really? That's good to know.
Yeah.
And is that it for questions, Casey?
Yeah, we good.
We good. We went 15 minutes over, but that's okay because it's not we can go anywhere.
One question. One more. I want to know the answer to this. I'm going to throw it on the screen right now. Can you read it?
From Esther Lynn. I'm actually curious what Sarah benches.
Well, I'm currently wearing bench tights, actually. You know, like the brand.
Wow.
There you go.
Very nice.
So it's a good question. I'm not like a crazy super strong. Like I would say, I don't know, like 65 kilos.
We're from America. What is
we're
that?
From America.
That's
140
like
pounds.
Yeah. And that would be for like a couple. So I could probably do like my own body weight, like 150 maybe. Not that impressive. I know. I'm working on it.
What's your deadlift, bro?
Oh, my deadlift's pretty good, actually. That's like probably closer to like, where I never really do max efforts, but probably like 250, 300 pounds.
Jesus.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, big butt. Don't lie.
I really need to get a bigger ass. I'm really lacking in the ass section. I mean, it's like, it just goes straight down from my back. Like, I don't have anything
there. Not me. I got a big one.
Look.
Like, what has happened to this show?
That's
pretty good. Happening. Casey, you're next.
Lovely. That's a nice hoop you have.
You gotta work on it.
No, it's decent.
Mine's real bad.
His is horrible. I wouldn't like.
But you're flexible, so you have that going for you, I guess.
But I reckon that everyone thinks that because I'm so flexible, that's why I don't put any muscle on my ass. Because I'm using my legs. Like, I'm not activating my core. I'm just using my legs all the time, apparently.
And your back just kind of splits into two eventually. Yeah,
it's love handles. It's all the meat that should be on my ass has gone to my love handles.
Sure.
It's a beautiful thing.
My butt just gets exponentially bigger. Like the more cookies I eat, like the bigger it gets. It's a problem.
Is the way I should go.
Maybe.
Give me some cookies.
Take us out, Jose.
What a world we live in. What a world. But this is the Wednesday edition of the A-Side Live Chat. You can find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube. You name it, probably there. PT has his crystals in tow. I have my one crystal in tow.
Sarah, dance, Sarah.
Sarah and Casey are dancing. But for Jose, that's PT, that's Casey, that's Sarah. We'll be back on Friday at the normal time. We're out.
We're out.
What?
Well, that's definitely the first time we've all compared asses.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.